Keanu Reeves and China Meville's The Book of Elsewhere has quietly become a cultural phenomenon, bridging the gap between literary fiction and speculative storytelling. Praised by critics for its philosophical depth and narrative complexity, this novel represents Reeves' most ambitious literary project to date. Celebrities from Neil Gaiman to Phoebe Bridgers have cited it as a favorite, with Bridgers noting how it reimagines immortality as a curse rather than a blessing. The book has sparked discussion groups worldwide, examining its themes of eternal recurrence and the meaning of death in a world where some cannot die. What does it mean to be immortal? And more importantly, what happens when immortality becomes a prison from which you cannot escape? The central figure of the Book of Elsewhere is an immortal being known variously as Bi, Unit, or simply the Tall Dark Man. Born when his mother somehow channeled blue lightning, a mysterious cosmic force, he emerged as something beyond human. Unlike traditional immortals who merely avoid death, Bi experiences death repeatedly, but always returns, reborn from egg-like chrysalises. His immortality isn't the glamorous eternal youth of vampire fiction, but a brutal cycle of death and rebirth spanning over 78,000 years. What makes Bi's character so compelling is the psychological weight of his existence. Having lived through countless civilizations' rises and falls, he's witnessed humanity's achievements being repeatedly developed and lost. Writing, agriculture, mathematics, all discovered and forgotten multiple times, he explains to researchers studying him. This perspective gives him a unique, often detached view of human concerns. When military personnel worry about protocol violations, he dismisses them with the weariness of someone who has seen countless empires and their rules crumble to dust. Bi's immortality has transformed him into something both more and less than human. In combat, he enters berserker states called rage fugues or blood dwoms, where his eyes glow blue and he fights with supernatural ferocity. These episodes leave him with little memory of his actions and often surrounded by carnage. Yet despite his potential for violence, he retains a philosophical curiosity about his existence, keeping meticulous records of his deaths in hopes of discerning patterns that might explain his purpose. Perhaps most poignantly, Bi doesn't seek true death, but rather death not as destination, but as horizon, the possibility of an end that gives meaning to existence. His immortality has become a prison, leaving him perpetually searching for answers about his nature and purpose in a world where he remains fundamentally alone. One of the novel's most fascinating elements is the 78,000-year rivalry between Bi and an immortal Babirusa, a tusked pig that, like Bi, was born of blue lightning. Their relationship forms a dark mirror to Bi's own immortality, showing another being cursed with endless existence but consumed by single-minded hatred rather than philosophical questioning. This ancient conflict serves as a central metaphor for the different ways immortal beings might cope with eternal life, with the Babirusa representing pure, primal drive in contrast to Bi's intellectual journey. The Babirusa hunts Bi across continents and centuries, demonstrating an uncanny ability to locate him no matter how thoroughly its remains are dispersed after each confrontation. Like Bi, it dies violently, falling from cliffs, torn apart by dogs, dropped by birds, poisoned by its own kind, consumed by fire, yet always reforms from an egg to continue its vendetta. Each resurrection follows the same pattern. A crystalline egg forms from scattered remains, incubates for exactly 7 days, and hatches to reveal the creature with all its memories and hatred intact. This cycle has repeated thousands of times across history, with each incarnation becoming more cunning and determined. Bi describes their first encounter in vivid detail, a pivotal moment when he delivered the creature from its dying mother during the Pleistocene epoch. The mother Babirusa had been struck by the same mysterious blue lightning that granted Bi his immortality, passing this curse to her unborn child. What began as an act of compassion created an unbreakable bond that twisted into eternal enmity, though B never fully understands why. Some passages suggest a Babirusa blames B for its condition, while others hint at deeper, more mysterious reasons for their conflict. This relationship raises profound questions about purpose and meaning in immortal existence. While B seeks understanding through contemplation and record-keeping, the Babirusa finds meaning in its single-minded pursuit. The contrast between their approaches becomes particularly striking in passages describing their encounters across different historical periods, from ancient Mesopotamia to medieval Europe to modern cities. When B discovers the creature has been tattooed with mystical symbols in a previous incarnation, he realizes various cults have worshipped both beings throughout history, suggesting their conflict has taken on mythological significance beyond their personal vendetta. Ancient texts refer to them as the seeker and the pursued, with some cultures viewing their eternal chase as a metaphor for the cycle of life and death. The Babirusa represents an alternative path B might have taken, channeling immortality into pure, unchanging purpose rather than philosophical questioning. Their relationship culminates in a poignant scene where B witnesses a newly reborn Babirusa in the Sahara Desert. Instead of continuing their eternal conflict, he simply waves goodbye as it walks toward the setting sun, suggesting the possibility of breaking cycles even for beings trapped in eternal recurrence. This moment of mutual recognition and release serves as a powerful commentary on the nature of purpose, revenge, and the possibility of change even in seemingly unchangeable circumstances. B's immortality exists within a complex modern framework where government agencies study and attempt to weaponize his abilities. The novel explores this through The Unit, a secretive military organization operating across multiple continents with black site facilities and unlimited funding. While they employ B for high-risk operations, from counterterrorism to supernatural threats, their primary interest lies in understanding and replicating his immortality. This creates a fascinating power dynamic. Though they provide B with resources and cover stories, their attempts to control him through elaborate protocols and surveillance systems prove largely futile against someone who has outlived entire civilizations. Diana Ahuja, a brilliant military-affiliated researcher leading the UNIT project, serves as both an observer and a bridge between B's ancient existence and our modern world. Through her detailed reports and personal observations, we see the bureaucratic machinery struggling to categorize and understand something fundamentally beyond human comprehension, an 80,000-year-old warrior who would not die. Her research forces academic institutions to repeatedly revise their understanding of human prehistory, as B's memories reveal countless unknown civilizations and lost technologies. The relationship between B and his handlers illuminates humanity's complex relationship with mortality. The unit's attempts to create super soldiers using B's biological samples, from blood work to tissue analysis, represent humanity's persistent drive to conquer death through technology. Their research facilities house countless failed experiments and millions in wasted resources, all pursuing the dream of manufactured immortality. Yet B's perspective, revealed through his conversations with Diana, suggests such efforts fundamentally misunderstand immortality's nature. It isn't merely the absence of death, but a transformation into something beyond human understanding, carrying psychological burdens that would shatter most mortal minds. Diana's character arc evolves from clinical scientific curiosity to profound philosophical questioning. Her initial approach, treating B as a fascinating specimen, gradually shifts as she witnesses his ancient wisdom and terrible loneliness. When she eventually asks whether B might be a god, it reflects humanity's instinctive need to contextualize the incomprehensible within familiar religious frameworks. The novel suggests, through their interactions, that immortality itself isn't divine, but rather a different state of existence, one that carries its own unique burdens, limitations, and psychological toll. Their relationship becomes increasingly complex as Diana realizes that understanding B requires moving beyond scientific methodology into philosophical territory, where empirical data offers few answers. The unit's bureaucratic structure, with its endless reports, protocols, and chain of command, serves as an ironic contrast to B's timeless existence, highlighting humanity's attempt to impose order on something that defies conventional understanding. Violence permeates the novel, from B's berserker combat episodes to military operations gone wrong. Yet, unlike conventional action narratives, violence in the Book of Elsewhere carries philosophical weight, particularly through its connection to B's cycle of death and rebirth. The novel explores this theme through multiple layers, physical, psychological, and metaphysical, creating a complex meditation on the nature of violence itself. When B dies, he typically rehatches at the location of his death, creating a growing mess of my old dead selves. These corpses remain preserved, neither decomposing nor disappearing, forming macabre landmarks across the landscape. This physical manifestation of eternal recurrence creates literal monuments to violence's repetitive nature. B describes finding his own bodies in various states, some peaceful, others contorted in agony, each telling its own story of violence endured. Only occasionally does B experience elsewhere deaths, where he awakens in different locations, journeys he meticulously documents in hopes of finding patterns. These relocations seem to follow mysterious rules, perhaps tied to the intensity of the death or B's emotional state at the time. The novel suggests violence itself might be cyclical rather than linear, operating on multiple timescales simultaneously. B wonders if the pattern he seeks lies not in his own deaths, but in those he causes, a theory supported by recurring encounters with vengeful individuals. This raises profound questions about responsibility and karma. Does violence inevitably return to its source? When B encounters others who seek to kill him, they often represent descendants of those he harmed centuries earlier, suggesting violence creates generational echoes. One particularly poignant example involves a family line that has passed down stories of B's actions for 7 generations, each member sworn to seek revenge. Perhaps most disturbing is how violence becomes ritualized through repetition. B's combat trances become almost ecstatic experiences, fight joy that rises within him during conflict, described in terms usually reserved for religious rapture. The Babirus's repeated attacks become a dance both beings know by heart, with each participant playing their role in an endless performance. Even the military researchers document B's resurrections with scientific detachment, transforming cosmic horror into data points. Their clinical notes contrast sharply with the visceral reality they describe, highlighting how institutions can normalize even the most extraordinary violence. Through these cycles, the novel asks whether violence can ever truly end or merely transform. When B finally waves goodbye to the Babirusa instead of engaging it, the moment suggests the possibility of breaking cycles, that even beings defined by eternal conflict might eventually find another path. This simple gesture carries more weight than any of his previous victories, suggesting that true transcendence might come not through overcoming violence, but by choosing to step outside its circular logic entirely. At its heart, the Book of Elsewhere is a philosophical exploration of meaning in a potentially meaningless universe. B's immortality forces him to confront questions most humans avoid through the comforting limitation of finite lifespans. Unlike mortals who can postpone existential questions or find solace in religious promises of afterlife, B must grapple with existence's fundamental uncertainties across centuries of conscious experience. B's meticulous record-keeping represents his attempt to impose pattern on chaos, to find meaning in his seemingly random journeys between life and death. His journals span millennia, filled with detailed observations of deaths, rebirths, and the lives between. He seeks ghosts unpresent in the pages, patterns of absence that might reveal purpose. This quest mirrors humanity's broader search for meaning through religion, philosophy, and science. Like archaeologists piecing together ancient civilizations from fragments, Bee sifts through his experiences looking for hidden significance. The novel explores this theme through Bee's various approaches to his immortality. At times, he embraces stillness, once sitting motionless on a mountain for 3 lifetimes just to see what would happen. He describes watching civilizations rise and fall below him, seasons cycling endlessly while he remained unchanged. Other times, he builds temporary lives among mortals, knowing they'll end when his companions age and die. He becomes a teacher, a farmer, a parent, roles that offer purpose but inevitably lead to loss. He even briefly rules as a god king in an ancient society, attempting to find purpose through power and worship, only to discover the hollow nature of forced devotion. These experiments reflect different philosophical approaches to meaning. Meditation stillness echoing Buddhist detachment, connection's temporary joy reflecting existentialist authenticity, power's hollow promises mirroring nihilistic despair. Yet none provide lasting answers. When Bee finally discovers the mechanism of his elsewhere journeys, the egg tooth that falls from his body during little deaths, it answers how but not why he exists. The physical explanation fails to satisfy his deeper yearning for purpose. The doctor's final insight that Bee is not immortal but infinitely mortal offers a profound reframing of his condition. Rather than seeing endless life as his burden, perhaps Bee's true nature is endless transformation, dying and being reborn like a butterfly emerging from a chrysalis. This perspective suggests meaning might lie not in permanent answers, but in perpetual becoming. Each death and rebirth represents not an ending, but a metamorphosis, with meaning emerging from the process of constant change rather than any fixed destination. Midway through the novel, a counterpoint to Bee emerges through the Life Project, a seemingly innocuous self-help group that masks a profound cosmic purpose. Led by Charles Alam, a descendant of an enigmatic figure from Bee's centuries-old past, the group initially presents itself as a wellness movement focused on living fully. However, beneath this New Age facade lies an organization wielding extraordinary powers that directly challenge Bee's fundamental nature. While Bee embodies death and transformation, Alam represents life and continuation in its purest form. This manifests literally in Alam's remarkable ability to resurrect the dead, first demonstrated in a pivotal scene where he revives a fallen soldier named Thaka from a decades-old battlefield. The resurrection process involves a mysterious blue energy that flows from Alam's hands, an effect that mirrors Bee's own powers but inverted. Later, when Alam resurrects Kiever, a key investigator tracking Bee's activities, the parallel becomes impossible to ignore. The resurrections aren't simple revivals. Those brought back retain their memories and personalities, but gain heightened awareness and subtle physical changes. The novel complicates this apparent dichotomy when Bee discovers they share the same blue lightning, a revelation that transforms their antagonistic relationship into something more complex. This shared power suggests they aren't truly enemies representing life versus death, but rather two sides of the same cosmic force, both embodying different aspects of change and transformation. Their abilities, though seemingly opposed, stem from the same fundamental energy that powers the universe's cycles of renewal. The true opposition emerges through Dr. Shure, ultimately revealed as an agent of stillness, a cosmic force opposing both life and death in favor of unchanging stasis. Shure's organization, operating through seemingly legitimate scientific institutions, works to prevent both Bee's transformative deaths and Alam's resurrections, seeking to freeze the world in perfect but sterile equilibrium. This three-way cosmic balance introduces a more nuanced philosophical framework than a simple life-death duality, suggesting that change itself, whether through death's transformation or life's growth, represents the natural order, while stagnation is the true cosmic enemy. This complex interplay of forces connects to ancient mythological systems, where gods represented not good versus evil, but different cosmic principles in balance, like the Hindu trinity of Brahma, creation, Vishnu, preservation, and Shiva, destruction. When Shur, in his final moments, cryptically promises another time before dying, it suggests these forces have clashed repeatedly throughout human history, perhaps explaining B's recurring sense that civilizations rise and fall in predictable cycles. The Life Project storyline thus elevates the novel beyond a simple meditation on personal immortality to profound questions about cosmic purpose and universal balance. If B and Alam represent different aspects of the same transformative force, death and rebirth, as complementary rather than opposing processes, their conflict may stem from a fundamental misunderstanding of their roles in maintaining universal balance against the ever-present threat of cosmic stagnation. For a being with perfect recall spanning 78,000 years, memory becomes both blessing and curse. The novel explores memory's role in identity through B's overwhelming accumulation of experience and the psychological mechanisms he develops to manage it. B's perfect memory allows him to speak countless languages, recall extinct civilizations, and navigate the world with unparalleled knowledge. Yet this same capacity forces him to remember every death, every loss, every civilization's fall with perfect clarity. Unlike humans, whose memories fade and transform, providing psychological distance from trauma, B carries every moment with crystalline precision. The doctor challenges B's claim of perfect memory, suggesting no memory is exact and questioning whether B can truly distinguish between memories and dreams. This raises profound questions about identity. If even immortals cannot trust their memories completely, how do any beings maintain coherent selfhood across time? B's coping mechanisms reveal memory's burden. He compartmentalizes experiences, sometimes sitting motionless for decades in meditation. He creates external memory systems through his death journal, outsourcing the pattern recognition his mind cannot complete despite its perfect recall. Most tellingly, he sometimes enters dissociative states during violence, suggesting even immortal psychology requires protection from overwhelming experience. The novel contrasts B's perfect memory with humanity's imperfect recall. When Stonier mourns his husband Thaka, his grief centers on fading memories, the fear that he'll forget details of their life together. This human limitation appears as both loss and mercy compared to B's perfect, inescapable recall. Through these explorations, the novel suggests memory itself might be immortality's greatest burden, not the physical pain of repeated deaths, but the psychological weight of carrying every moment across millennia without the mercy of forgetting. The titular Elsewhere represents the novel's central mystery, the rare occasions when B awakens in different locations after death rather than at the site of his demise. These journeys become his obsession, documented meticulously in hopes of discerning patterns that might explain his purpose or offer escape from his immortal cycle. Elsewhere functions on multiple levels throughout the narrative. Literally, it describes B's mysterious relocations from Drowned, Sane, 1 February 1737 to Benin to Shot, Secret Police, Warsaw, 25 February 1861 to London. Metaphorically, it represents the possibility of transcendence, movement beyond current limitations into new states of being. The novel gradually reveals the mechanism behind these journeys through the egg tooth. When it falls from B's body during a little death, his essence drifts elsewhere while a new body grows. This physical explanation satisfies the how, but not the why of his relocations, maintaining the mystery of their purpose. Elsewhere also connects to the novel's exploration of death itself. When the doctor suggests B is not immortal, but infinitely mortal, it reframes death not as ending, but as transition, movement from one state to another. This perspective echoes religious concepts of afterlife, but grounds them in B's physical experience of death and rebirth. The concept extends beyond B to other characters. When Thaka briefly revives despite fatal injuries, he experiences a form of elsewhere, existing between life and death before returning fully to one state. The Babirusa's repeated reincarnations represent another form of movement between states of being. Through these explorations, elsewhere becomes more than geographical relocation. It represents the possibility of transformation itself. The novel suggests that even beings trapped in seemingly eternal patterns might find unexpected pathways to new states of existence, offering hope within cycles that initially appear inescapable. The doctor's final insight that B is not immortal, but infinitely mortal, provides the novel's most profound reframing of existence. This perspective shift transforms B's curse into something potentially meaningful, not endless stagnation, but endless transformation. Traditional immortality narratives often portray unending life as stasis, remaining unchanged while the world evolves around you. The Book of Elsewhere inverts this trope by making B's immortality a series of deaths and rebirths. Each cycle brings physical transformation through his egg-like chrysalis and the potential for psychological evolution through new experiences. This infinite mortality connects to philosophical traditions emphasizing transformation over permanence. Eastern concepts like reincarnation suggest consciousness continues through multiple lifetimes, while Western existentialism emphasizes authentic engagement with mortality as the source of meaning. B's experience combines these traditions. He retains consciousness across deaths like reincarnation, but physically experiences each death like mortal beings. The butterfly metaphor the doctor invokes is particularly apt. A butterfly doesn't simply live longer than its caterpillar self, it transforms completely while maintaining continuity of being. Similarly, B's deaths aren't failures of immortality, but necessary components of his nature, allowing evolution rather than stagnation. This perspective offers potential peace for B's existential questioning. If his purpose isn't to avoid death, but to experience transformation through death, his seemingly random elsewhere journeys might represent not cosmic punishment, but opportunities for growth and change. The wonder this realization brings B suggests he might finally find meaning not in escaping his cycle, but in embracing its transformative potential. In this light, the Book of Elsewhere offers wisdom for mortal readers as well. Perhaps our lives gain meaning not through duration, but through transformation. Not by avoiding endings, but by allowing each ending to become a new beginning.